What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast, The Real Rundown. I'm here with the usual... I'm sorry, that was a bad intro, Scott. You're not the usual guy. You're one of our stars. Scott is here.
I'm sorry, I'm too usual. I'll try not to be as usual next time, but all right. I'll take whatever intros I can get.
Okay. I promise I'll work on that. And then we have our special guest this week. He's a former host, former cast member, I would say. He's been on a pod for Paul. Welcome back.
What's up, fellas?
Chilling. How you been? Watching a lot of stuff.
I actually just finished watching Beef.
I thought you told me you watched that a while ago. No.
No, I started. It was like I tried to watch it, and then I was on and here and there. But I finally finished it, and it was a heck of a ride.
Pedro recommended that a while ago. I actually didn't finish it. Scott, I don't think you... Did you get around to watching Beef? Scott?
I have not yet. My focus has been in other places, but that's a Netflix show, right? Yeah. I know it's got a lot a lot of awards. So eventually I will get to it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to tell myself the same thing and probably just never finish it just because there's so much stuff going on. But in that spirit, I just want to kick it around. It feels like we haven't been together in such a long time. I know it was just 2 weeks ago, but do a quick roundtable. I'm just curious what you guys have watched recently. Adding on to Beef, Scott, have you seen anything interesting, new or old?
Well, I think I was in this mode of watching documentaries. I don't know why, but I've been watching... The Story of Sin City, which is on Max and CNN. It's about what brought Las Vegas to be what it is and how it's changed to present day. The Martha Stewart doc, which is about her career and how what led to her to go to jail and how she revived her career. There's also a documentary series called Photographer that's on National Geographic and also Disney Plus, which follows a few different photographers on what they do and as far as what their specialty is. So, and of course, watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, which it's the final season. I think episode 8 just aired. So you can catch that also on Max. So been quite busy watching many things. Oh, yes. So I had a lot to mention. It was a speed round. But many more I don't have time to talk about.
I'm getting into Curb. I think I'm about 4 episodes in. I'm sort of taking my time with it. I know it's the last season, so it's kind of a long goodbye to that cast and characters. But yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. I think that show for me is always just like... It's never a 10. It's never a 2. But it's always like a solid like 6 or 8. Probably like a 6... Probably like an 8 for me. So I always enjoy a little bit of Larry David, and I'm going to miss that guy when he's gone. I feel like he's one of those you don't appreciate it in the time.
So it's pretty good.
It's right? Pretty good, yeah.
Okay, all right.
It's pretty good.
Right. I think I fell off like around season 5 or 6. I used to watch Curb. It was pretty good, and then I just fell off, and I never got back on it yet.
It's a show that's easy to binge because it's a good 25 minutes. So if you're just like, I don't know, folding laundry or like just doing something at home, I just like to throw it on and just sort of have it on in the background because the plot is generally pretty easy to follow. And you just sort of turn your eye to like a couple of quick jokes here and there. It's really good.
I have to stop everything while I'm watching it. I could never binge it because there's so much going on and so much craziness. I just need time to reflect on it and go, boy, I relate to it quite a bit. Then eventually, I need a week to move on.
Yeah, there's always the next one. Every season has that one moment. I think last season for me was the one where he was walking around wearing the MAGA hat just so people would not talk to him. And he could eat in peace. I thought that was great. But yeah, so Curb is finishing this year. Paul, what's been on your TV set?
Beef, X-Men 97, I just started watching that with my daughter. Two things I really wanted to watch and I still haven't had a chance was Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, and that's not streaming, is it?
No, not yet. It's in theaters. I wanted to really go check it out. And then Love Lies Bleeding.
What is that?
Those
sounds familiar.
That's with, what's her name from Twilight?
I know a movie, the A24 film with Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, with the wrestler, the bodybuilder.
Yeah.
That looked pretty intense. So yeah, those are on my list to watch.
Okay. Yeah, those are theater releases. Are they? I'm not sure if they're both out yet. But I remember.
No, I think in Late Night with the Devil is going to come out on Shudder. I don't know if it's going to be like maybe a couple of weeks or so. But Shudder has something pretty good going on with the horror, so I think they should be getting it pretty soon.
Does Shudder get horror releases like that, like big time horror releases?
I think they're building up. They're getting bigger and bigger. I gotta check them out a little bit more because I like some of those. Like, I'm not a big fan of like the slasher kind of horror, but like Alien and these are kind of intriguing. Late Night with the Devil. I like that actor. He's been in a couple things here and there as like a supporting. So now something.
He's usually either the villain or like a red herring kind of character.
Yeah. So to see him get his lead now, and it looks actually like really good. I'm interested to see this. Something you said the other in one of your older pods, you mentioned having like stuff on in the background, and I do the similar thing. I throw on like one of my favorite channels on YouTube if I'm like cooking or folding clothes.
Yeah.
Just to have like you would have back in the day like cable. You mentioned it before. And it's like it's funny because when you said it, I was like, I do the same thing. I always throw something on YouTube like just doing something mundane and just have it in the background.
Sometimes I'll spend more time finding the right thing to watch on YouTube than actually like cooking or doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But it has to be it has to be something good that I could just leave in the background.
I've been doing the same thing with watching Survivor because I have all these episodes recorded. That's another thing I've been watching the previous season, not this current season, and just watching them one after the other and just fast forwarding through the transitions. Because they're 90-minute episodes.
Oh, my God, really?
90-minute episodes. So I'll watch it, like, speed through. Oh, because Jeff Probst does not stop talking. He's like, he does, like, a one-on-one interview with every person at Travel Counts. Like, I don't need to know their mindset. I just need to know who their accent. I want to know what they're quoting out.
Yeah.
I don't need to know what's going through their mind or what are they feeling? What do they think is going to happen? Like, just make it happen.
That's always been my issue with reality television is the pacing of the show and the editing of the show. I just feel like you can cut 85% and I only want that 15%.
But people like that. They've made the show that. They made it into that. And then one other show I've been watching, which is a must watch, Sarah Silverman is hosting a spinoff of Ed. Don't judge until I say it.
Okay, go for it.
She's hosting Stupid Petrix, which is a based.
Oh my god!
Which is based.
I hate her.
Don't make the face. Don't make the face.
I like Survivor, but then you lost me with Sarah Silverman.
No. Let me finish. It's a very entertaining Stupid Petrix show, which is based on David Letterman's segment that he used to do on his late night show.
But there's no David Letterman. And the reason why that worked on Letterman is because it was like a 2-minute segment.
Oh, no, let me,
you,
no.
You make no. it a 30-minute TV show. What and makes like, it, I saw the trailer. I said, who's watching this?
But what makes and it funny.
Now we know.
What makes it funny is that they have animals that they show as being her writers. So they'll be in the writer room and they're all talking. The announcer is a chipmunk. So he'll be like at a microphone. It looks like he's announcing her, and like she'll walk out and go like this, and there he is sitting, like standing there in front of a microphone.
Chipmunk has good representation working with Sarah Silverman.
Well, yeah, it's probably of hay, so that's all that matters.
I think I'd enjoy more watching you watch it.
Well, you know what? We'll do a spinoff. We'll do what they do on Bravo, where they have two jerks sit there and make comments about nothing that's happening on screen. Perfect. You can watch me laugh.
I think that could work.
I you know what? I think it will work, because I think when I'm laughing at everything, I go, where's the camera? Where do I look? Where's my camera?
Okay. All right, Scott, is that an ABC?
No. Great question. It's actually on TBS and probably also available on Max as well.
Okay, yeah, TBS, that makes sense.
But thank you for cueing me to say how to watch it. So now you know how to watch it.
I haven't watched TBS in, I can't remember. Maybe the last thing I watched on TBS was Conan O'Brien. But I think he's long finished that show.
He's in the land of podcasting now. And making a lot of money out of it.
He has a new show coming out on HBO, on Max, I believe.
It's a travel show, I think. It's a continuation of his travel antics, which is also funny.
Yeah, that was a good series. Pivoting hard, really hard. Shogun on Hulu. Have you guys checked the show out by any chance?
I have, and I gave it. And I need to go back to watch it. I'm curious to see how you're watching it. Are you watching it in the native language, or are you watching it with it English dubbed?
Well, the Japanese is in Japanese,
right,
subtitled. The Portuguese is in English, but it's not dubbed. They just speak English straight up.
Well, is that
what you mean?
I've been watching it because I don't want to read everything. So I've been watching it with audio described.
But they just describe the scenery and what's happening. You still have to.
There's English and they're describing what they're saying. They do both.
How do you describe what someone is saying? Isn't that a translation?
Well, they describe what they're doing. In addition to the English while they're talking.
So this is that's like the perfect way to like cook with your back turned when they're describing the scene to you.
I know, isn't it?
Japanese man carrying a sword walks into a village. Right? That's what
I think they're not really describing their nationality. They're just saying the father walks over to the son and
okay, and why then, are you and watching it like, that way?
Because it feels like it's very quick. It's a very quick show to me. So I can be like this. It's like, you know what? It's like reading Harry Potter. It's like reading Harry Potter, where everything is described, overly described.
Yeah, yeah, okay. No, I just use the subtitles, and then parts of it are in English. Yeah, I thought the show got a lot of hype. My initial reaction was very dismissive when I saw the trailer months ago. I was like, yeah, this doesn't look very good. And then all the hype came in. This is like, oh, this is like the new Game of Thrones. It's that level of writing. So I kind of felt silly, so I went to check it out. And I got that impression too. It's like, wow, this is really high level television. But what I don't like about the show is like how the white guy is the hero in every scene. And yes, it takes place in Japan, and you know, it does a great job at depicting historical Japan and the culture and like the warriors and the families and etc. But there are times where literally like back-to-back-to-back scenes where the white guy just like saves the day. And I don't know why they made that choice. That's the only thing that kind of bugs me is like he's basically a prisoner, but he's telling everybody off and he's being extremely aggressive. They just accept him, and you know, he ends up saving the day or showing people up on multiple episodes. So I'm going to continue watching it because I know it's just a mini series that's going to wrap up in 6 episodes or 8 episodes. I think I'm 4 or 3 in, It's good, but it's a little disappointing. I don't think it deserves all the hype that it's gotten. Not even close. If you want to say like production design and just taking you to a world that you're not really used to seeing today, great, feels fresh. But story wise, you know, it's the characters are pretty shallow, other than like the three main people that you see.
I think it's really nice. I think also the reason why I'm watching what the video described, because it's so well shot. The transitions are beautiful. So I'm too focused on what it looks like to little like what's happening. So
that's wild to me that you're doing that. But yeah, it is it's certainly an interesting way to engage with the show. But okay.
I haven't watched it. It's next on my list. I just finished Gentleman, that Guy Ritchie show on Netflix. So I think that's going to be my next thing is probably Shogun.
Is Gentleman like any good?
If you like Guy Ritchie's style of storytelling, it's very entertaining. It's that like, I don't know how to describe it. You know, if you've seen Lock, Stock, Smoking Barrel.
Yeah.
What's the other one with Brad Pitt where he's that
Snatch?
Snatch. That type of like, he even did like Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I like the Sherlock Holmes movies actually, yeah. With Robert Downey Jr.
I love his kind of like snippy, you know, kind of like runaround storytelling. And so I found this very entertaining. And he was actually he was there, I think he did the first couple episodes. But you couldn't feel the transition on to the new director or whatever in the later episodes. It all felt pretty smooth. So I enjoyed it. It was a good time.
Okay. I was going to pass on it just because I feel like I like Guy Ritchie too, but his more recent work hasn't really hit for me. I did like The Gentleman, the movie. I thought that was cool. I know this is based on that.
Hugh Grant was great in that. And so was Charlie. I forgot his last name from that biker gang show.
Yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about, but I don't know his name. Yeah, Matthew McConaughey's in it. I like a lot of his stuff. Rock and Rolla is really good. Revolver. But I feel, I don't know.
Oh, I loved Rock and Rolla. Rock and Rolla was really good.
I think the last... Like, it's been a while. I guess Gentleman was 2019. He's a little bit hit or miss, but the stuff that hits really resonates and stays with you.
I'm curious. Yeah, I think I'll watch it. But... I think I'll watch it. I'm curious. I saw it. It's the number three on for TV series on Netflix, so it's certainly going to get a lot of viewing if it's at that level.
What's one and two?
I don't know. I closed the window. I didn't see the precursor of that question, so I will reopen the window and check it out.
And yeah, I like the lead actor too. He's pretty good. I think Theo James is his name, and he's pretty good.
He was in White Lotus season two. And then you have what's his name? I want to say Giancarlo Esposito, but that sounds wrong to me. The guy from
Breaking. Yes, you're right.
That is his name?
You're right. He is in it, and he's not in it a lot, but he's in it. And he's like, you know, he plays his typical role.
He plays him. That's his
character. He plays himself, yeah.
Yeah, as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh yeah, same guy.
Breaking Bad, The Gentleman, The Boys, he's like always like, you know, that type of character.
Yeah.
Hey, so here, if it works, So here are the top TV shows. Three, Body Problem. Number two is Homicide, New York. And then three is Gentlemen. And then we go downhill. It's kind of... four, Buying Beverly Hills. And then five is The Resident, which was a TV series, which they just recently put on Netflix. And then there was Brian Simpson, Live from the Mothership, and then they have the spinoff of Avatar, The Last Airbender, the program Hot Wheels, Let's Race, and a show that you previously talked about, Bruno, which is Physical 100. It's back for a second season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the first episode.
That three-body problem's getting some hype.
It is. So I tuned in to watch the first episode Sunday night. Because I mentioned in our chat, Scott, that we should watch that. And yeah, it didn't really hit for me. It didn't hit right off the bat. Right off the bat, I was turned off. I don't really know what it's about. It's about a bunch of physicists who start seeing things. It was just like, you know, another like, trying to be like a high concept show that focuses more on the concept than the actual characters and the story. That it lost me pretty quick. And I think, Paul, you and I had talked about why I dislike Netflix shows, and this is sort of a prime example. We can do a whole episode on that, but I just feel it and it's from Benioff, one of the creators of, or writers of Lost, but I just feel like I couldn't really connect with any of the characters on the show, and I didn't really care about them, really. It just doesn't have, like, a strong human element for me to connect. It's more about, like, oh, what's happening? What's the mystery? What's going on? And I think, for me, that's great, but that needs to be secondary to the characters that are going through it.
Based on that description, it reminds me of Law & Order episodes where you have a storyline, but it's not really about the storyline. It's just about the case. And they just have characters that are looped in, and they have the main characters, and they just move on to the next story for the next episode. Is that kind of what it felt like? Or
it didn't feel like a procedural in that sense. Because those type of procedurals, they give you the problem right away, and then the rest of the show is you trying to figure out along with the detectives or whoever. So it's more engaging because you're playing along. You get to be part of the detective team. This one, they try to get you emotionally connected to the characters. I just feel like it doesn't work. That's all.
Well, I added it to my watch list, and we'll see what happens.
The concerning thing I've been hearing about it is that it leaves a lot of open-ended questions by the end of the series. And the problem with a lot of Netflix shows is you don't know if there's going to be season two or they're just going to cancel it. So you invest all that time and you're left on this, you know, cliffhanger, and then you might not ever get that investment back. And that's the problem I'm hearing about it.
So that's a common thing with Netflix. If the algorithm decides to dump it, then it's going to get dumped.
And a lot of shows, you know, that I've invested in, and then it's like, You're just waiting for that answer, and then you hear it. The next thing you hear, it's canceled. And you're there goes all that time I wasted on that.
What was the first show that happened to? It was like the 808 or something like that. You remember that show? It was like another science fiction show. The 08, Scott, pull that up.
The 08. See, this is why when I watch something on Netflix, I let it sizzle. I don't jump into it because I see, do I need to buy into this?
I mean, I look at it like, Paul, I get what you're saying. The AO. Is it AO? I don't know.
Oh, IO. I think I remember something about that.
Yeah. Anyway, that was like the first one that was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're canceling this, and they left it on a cliffhanger. That's when you realize Netflix was a tech company and not a film or television company.
What was the show called?
The OA.
OA. The OA?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it wasn't like super mainstream, but it had its fan base. It's pretty old. It's pretty old.
Like, for instance, I'm going to waste time with The Gentlemen if they don't have a season two, because it was a nice enclosed arc for the first season. And it left a little bit open, like, oh, I'd like to see where these characters continue. But if it doesn't happen, I feel really content with what I just watched.
Yeah.
But these shows hinge you on this cliffhanger and you just want to know the answers. That's the whole thing. They drag you with question, right. question, question. And if you don't get those answers, you're kind of like, I wasted my time for what?
Yeah. You don't feel like, you know, you got dessert after your meal. Feels unsatisfied.
Yeah, nothing.
Well, if you ever realize watching TV is a gamble and you're not going to get anything in return, I think you're a little late to that party. You never know when you're going to get it when you're watching a show. You may not like what the ending is.
Yeah.
That's true.
Should we move on to the main topic?
Let's do that. That's a good suggestion. I like that idea.
I think we covered a lot. Wait.
What's up? Before you do that, what did you think of X-Men 97, real quick, just to pick your brain?
I was a little bit, you know, I was excited, and then I was like eye rolling, and then when I watched it, I was like, ah, okay, I like this. I thought it was good, you know. I think my biggest adjustment is the voices being slightly different, the animation being slightly different. I like, everyone is talking about what they did with Cyclops. I agree, like, I like the original Cyclops from the first series as well, but I guess just comparing what they this show to the movie version of Cyclops that we've seen, like, they've done that guy such a poor service. And he really shines here. I think he probably gets the most shine in his ability or his opportunity to show his leadership, but also, like, they use his lasers in really cool ways. Like him, like, land using the laser beam to land, to soften his landing. And then him, when he's fighting the Friends of Humanity in that warehouse, he's using it to, like, move himself around. Do you remember that?
They did that with a couple of the characters, like, using their powers in a creative, inventive way. Like Gambit riding on the back of Wolverine and charging his claws and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was cool. And unfortunately, I think they made a solid effort trying to get all the original voice actors back. But the few they had to replace because they passed away. But I think they did, like, it was a solid effort where they were like, we need everybody from the old, you know, original X-Men.
Yeah, and I think it's just a matter of, you know, it's a small adjustment period, the voice thing. They just sound slightly off. And I know some of them are the same, but again, with time, your voice changes. But I liked it. I'm hyped. I like where the story's going. I think focusing on Jean Grey and Cyclops, I think that's probably going to be the main thread for the story. And then you have this Magneto element to it where he's now in the Professor and Xavier role, but also trying to adjust to that role and make himself comfortable in that role in terms of living up to Professor Xavier's expectations and what that responsibility means and his relationship with, like, humanity and how they have treated him. There's a lot of complexity for an animated show. But that's why the original was so good. It dealt with these adult themes, and it was nice, slow-paced. It gave the characters time to express themselves, but then also had, like, these awesome fighting scenes. And it just hits.
I was trying to explain that to my daughter, like, some of the themes, like, the mutants are facing with, like, you know, and it kind of correlated, like, racism back in the day and things like that.
Yeah.
And how they hit on these big themes. What I'm excited for is, they had a couple of Easter eggs in there where they talked about Spider-Man and they had Eddie Brock on the newspaper. Because Disney owns all this stuff, they're going to do a ton of cameos in this first season. And, like, one of the ways they're getting away with that is Morph. So Morph could change into, like, so that's going to be a cool way to see them integrate a lot of these other, like, Punisher, maybe Daredevil, who knows who they're going to throw in this season.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that.
When I saw Morph kind of jumping from in the fight scenes from person to person, my gut was like, I hope they don't use this to substitute. And I get it, like, they don't have six seasons to show to have, like, an Omega Red episode, so maybe you just have, like, 2 seconds of Morph transforming into him. But yeah, I guess I was like, I hope Morph doesn't just become a substitute for having these characters on screen and giving them airtime. But I understand, like, given the limited amount of time they have for the series, like, that's something we probably should expect. But I liked it. Also, like, real quick, why is Morph back? So he dies in the first episode of the original. He comes back.
He comes back. So I think they're trying to use him more, and I think for that vehicle. Because he, like, right away, he became, like, Archangel or something like that. So they're trying to use him to that, like, kind of cameo.
Yeah, yeah. I got to figure out. I know he came back with Mr. Sinister as, like, evil morph. And then I don't know what happened to that character at the end of the series.
That's another reason they're kind of making him in the forefront, because I don't want to spoil it, but I'm hearing Sinister is going to play a big role this season.
I can tell you right now, you're not spoiling it for me. You're definitely not spoiling for me. I can guarantee it.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I know you're enjoying it. It's got like a 98 on Rotten Tomato and 94 from the audience, so everybody seems to be glad that it's back. And I think it's a great jumping off point for the new Disney X-Men franchise that they're currently working on. This is good to get X-Men back on people's minds and in good graces. You know, it creates like a space for you to breathe and create some separation from the X-Men films. It puts this at the forefront of people's minds, I think, before we get to the new films, I think.
And it's cool sharing it with my daughter, because she was basically, she's the age I was when I was watching X-Men on TV. Wow. And I was telling her, like, back in the day, there was no DVR, no streaming. So if you missed an episode that Saturday morning, and let's say it was like a 4-episode story arc, you're hearing it about it in school.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't want to be spoiled, but at the same time, you know you're probably not going to catch a replay or a repeat until, like, the summer.
Till summer,
so,
yeah.
Hooked, like, yeah. So it was
summer,
like,
is when you catch
it.
It
was rough those days, yeah.
No, rough. No VCR, come on. You didn't have
VCR.
I didn't have a VCR.
I
had a few. But if you missed it, you can't record it. Like, I used to watch as I record, because, you know, those VCR timers never worked out.
And my timer, maybe my VCR was pimped out. I would take the tape and I would schedule all the recordings for that day. It was like before DVRs, where I had a VCR. Yeah. I had a VCR that would just record everything, and I'm like, okay, the tape's ready. Stick it in.
All right, we got it. Just for the sake of time, we got to cut this short. We're at 30 minutes. Paul, do you want to give final thought?
No, I was going to say, Scott, you'd be SOL if there was a power outage in the middle of the night. That's when it would throw all the recordings, like, off. Because then you'd look at the VCR and be flashing 12. And you're there goes everything.
Oh, no. So when we had digital cable, I would then even go a step further where I would record things in the middle of the night because I knew it was going to repeat. So I had a backup. But luckily, we had no power outages.
If you were always out of the house, when did you watch any of these things? He still has tapes that he needs to watch.
Not anymore. I've switched. But thanks to recording, you could fast forward through the commercials. So it didn't take the full hour to watch something. But anyway.
Okay. Let's move to main topic. Quite on Set. Quite on Set is Scott. I think you or Pedro recommended this. Wasn't really on my radar. I tend to kind of skip these types of. I'm going through a phase where I'm kind of annoyed at all these sort of documentaries that have to do with my childhood or my sort of teenage years or just anything nostalgia. I'm kind of rolling my eyes at, but I'm glad you recommended it. It was pretty good. So just to give a little bit of background here, let me find. Oh boy, I don't have anything up. It's a documentary focused on, I think, almost like a 30-year span of Nickelodeon television programming for kids, where it focuses on an abusive work environment and, I guess, pedophilia or child predators all the way from, like, the mid-90s until as late as, like, 2017, if I remember correctly. Is that right? Or today, even.
It was the starting point of Nickelodeon doing studio sitcoms. Prior to that point, they were doing shows that were on location and more game shows. So this was their transition to do entertainment shows, and it was all produced that were scripted because you may remember Hey Dude, Double Dare, you know, all these game shows they were doing. But this was their breaking point, And it was all, and this all happened to be produced by one person, okay, Dan Schneider.
I want to pause you there. Let's take it a little bit slower. So, Scott, just give us a quick list of the shows that Dan Schneider wrote and produced. What were some of the famous shows?
I was just going to mention it. So Dan Schneider produced, so these shows may sound familiar. All That, which then eventually spun off to create Kenan and Kel. Then there was The Amanda Show. Then Drake and Josh. Then there was Zoe 101, which then brought us to iCarly. Then there was Victorious. And then that goes into present day where there was Sam and Kat and then this...
Okay. Yeah.
Henry Danger thing.
Thank you. Did you guys watch any of these shows? I'm curious.
Yes.
Paul, are you a big iCarly guy?
No. iCarly was past my point. I was checked out by that point.
What did you watch, Scott?
I watched All That. I watched The Amanda Show. I kind of watched Zoe 101. Didn't watch Drake and Josh. I thought it was
okay.
Too much.
So this was like mid-90s to like 2010, early 2010s maybe, or mid-2000s. So you're pretty familiar with these shows. I never watched any of these shows. I definitely heard of iCarly, and obviously I did watch All That. I didn't like it. I just thought it was weird. My era of Nickelodeon actually ends right when all this stuff begins. So I used to watch Hey Dude, Wild and Crazy Kids, Double Dare, Rugrats. And then this era of television, didn't really speak to me. But I understand it was famous. I know Pedro also is a fan of All That, and Kenan and Kel and things. So I guess going into it, you know, I found it interesting. There's just so much to talk about. I guess my first takeaway is Mark Summers being on screen for like 5 minutes, just talking about how much it sucked to get slimed. And then he's gone. He contributes really nothing else to the program. I thought that was funny.
Well, he was on to talk about pre the sitcom shows. That's crazy.
No, I understand. I thought it was kind of two threads here. One is the bad behavior on set from Dan Schneider to the cast and crew and everybody. And then was the Drake Bell story, which felt very singular and sort of existing in its own separate lane. Obviously, the common thread here is that this all happened under Nickelodeon Studios. But I thought there were two completely different stories, not completely unrelated, but unfair to kind of mesh them together, I felt like. How did you guys sort of read that?
Well, I think it depends how you're watching it, because it was done as, if you're watching it on TV, it aired in two parts. So the first night it was focusing on, you know, how the shows came about, the crew, and just the other actors and how they came about with all the spinoffs. Then the Drake Bell part was considered like part two that aired the next day. So it kind of was siloed separately. But if you watch it online, it kind of, on streaming, it felt like it was just all together.
No, on streaming, it was four episodes.
Right, but if you watch it one after the other, it kind of feels like it's all in one. But it kind of, the Drake Bell part could have been its own documentary in itself.
That's my point. They both could be their own documentaries in themselves, but they got kind of jammed together here. So I think we can address each one of these individually. I think the Drake Bell thing is just horrible. That reminded me of like the Michael Jackson thing when they were like, oh, what happened between you guys? What did he do to you? He's like, you know, you don't want to know. the worst thing you can, I think he said something like the worst thing you can imagine, like that happened, which is, and I also understand that was like the first time him opening up about that, if I remember correctly.
Yes, because the court case, not to go into it in detail, but the whole case was sealed. So no one knew who it necessarily was when the court case came about.
He was a minor.
The real unsung hero here is his girlfriend's mom, who, you know, pushed the issue and brought him to therapy and had him, you know, expose all this. And I like, don't get me wrong, I like this doc. I think it was pretty good. I didn't like the formatting of it. I didn't like the flow. I liked how they started with Dan Schneider, but they didn't need to end with him again. I think the Drake Bell was very impactful, very powerful, and that was the way it should have ended off. And they kind of rounded it back again and brought it back to Dan Schneider. There was no need for that. I think what happened to Drake was huge, and it escalated. I think it should have like continued the escalation and ended there.
Yeah.
Because when I first started watching, I thought it was a joke. Like the booger boy and how he was sneezed and he spit, and they were like trying to make sexual innuendos. And I didn't really see that. The nose on his shoulders, they said it looked like penises. I didn't see that. So to me, I was like, oh, this is a joke. But then it started getting deeper, and then it started unraveling. I just wish they didn't come back to Dan Schneider. I wish they had ended it up on Drake Bell, because that's where the focus should have been in the end.
So let's...
Well, I think
I want to talk about. Sorry, I just want to talk about Dan Schneider for a moment. I agree completely with you, Paul. I think looking back at some of the stuff, it's like, you know, they were talking about this whole idea of like writing a show for kids but jokes for adults, and I'm like, well, that's what Toy Story is. That's what every Disney movie is. Is they write it for kids but there's jokes for adults. The whole, like, seeing everything sexualized, I didn't see that. Certainly kids don't see that. And I felt like they were really nitpicking and trying to build a case against Dan Schneider on a lot of this stuff that ultimately was, like, either, like, your view of this, that, sure, you could write about it and accuse him of sexualizing kids in this way with this joke. Other was, like, kids who lost their job and then like they couldn't handle being fired or let go or not being famous anymore and watching their colleagues on TV every week, which sucks, but that's Hollywood. That's not new. But Dan Schneider was actually a real bad guy. You didn't have to build up all this nonsense to show that he was a real asshole and a tyrant on set. Because when you bring in the writers, the set designers, and the directors all saying how terrible he was, when you talk about the other issues, you're like, well, that's not his problem, too. You can't just, like, pile on everything on this guy now. And that's kind of what it felt like.
Well, it was his show. He was the executive producer. So anything that was in the show was pretty much his decision. But even... there were things that when I was watching it as a kid, I always found it to be odd that what they didn't mention is that every single series that he produced had a scene where the character had to show their feet to the camera. And I always went, that is odd. No other show find it to be appropriate to have the character show, like, it had nothing to do with the story. It's like, look at my foot, and like put, like, show it with, it's like, no.
I mean, and you picked up on that when you were 8?
Yes. I went, I don't need to see that.
But isn't that that's what I thought about the whole show in general. I don't need to see any of this. And then I just never saw it again.
But it was just odd that I'm like, why are they showing it in a different series? And then another series and another series. Like, it was consistent.
Yeah, I don't know. At that point, you just don't watch it, I guess. I mean...
it was hard in this context because to me it seemed like the foot thing was like, okay, maybe they showed 5 episodes with feet out of how many years of episodes. So I didn't watch it like when it was going on, so I don't know that. What did hit me, though, was Ariana Grande.
Yeah, that was
some of the
very
scenes
weird
that she was doing. And I was like, okay, now this is very strange.
Oh, yes.
Like,
yes.
This is horrible.
Yeah. Now, also, those scenes that they showed, they didn't necessarily provide context. That was not in an episode. That was for online content. That was like for YouTube. Like, it wasn't even necessary for them to do. It wasn't in an actual episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was really weird. That
whole segment was weird. There was no context to it whatsoever, but I can't even imagine that making sense. I mean, I don't know.
You don't need context to understand that it seems like it's inappropriate.
Scott, the one thing I didn't agree, though, was, like, I know he was a showrunner, but there's so many different levels of approval that it has to get through.
That's and what was on.
Forget about that they all approved that. As a parent, I couldn't even imagine being on set and seeing, like, my daughter doing some of this stuff. And, like I feel horrible for Drake's dad because he saw, you know, I know that we're going out to that, but he saw it and then he was kind of forced where he couldn't even do anything about it because of the mom. So, like, being a parent and seeing, like, Ariana Grande doing this kind of stuff and, like, you know, they were on set. They were supposed to be on set a lot of the time and they could have stepped in too.
The only one that spoke up was Tracy, who's Brian Hearn's mom.
Booger boy, right?
Yeah, she was like, she immediately was like, no, this is like really shady. This is super fishy and this is like weird and awkward. And she started speaking up and ultimately, you know, according to her and the doc, like Dan kind of pushed her out and ultimately didn't call her son back for the show.
But wait, that was a different thing though. That was when he was doing the skin colored suit and they said the comment about charcoal and he got hurt. And it wasn't anything like sexual or anything like that. It was about that comment.
It was just offensive as hell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
But his mom, you know, they did say his mom had been raising a lot of flags, and then the kid ultimately blamed his mom for getting kicked off the show because she was just constantly complaining about, you know, the skits that he was in or that everybody was in and, you know, what was going on. So she kind of, I think she had probably the only parent other than the dad that you mentioned that had good instincts here. And I think a lot of these other parents are just like, hey, put my kid in the next sketch. He'll eat boogers or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
But even that, when that aired, those episodes were like, let's have them do a Fear Factor type of thing. I would be looking away from the TV like, this is not comedy. This is not comedy. And like, you even saw the kid that was lying on the ground where he had all these spiders or whatever crawling over him, he's like, he literally said that he wasn't comfortable. He said it on air in the scene. He looked like he was freaking out. So if Dan says, I didn't know they didn't like doing it, like, you're in the control room. Use your eyes and ears.
To me, I guess it makes sense that Dan Schneider ran and wrote all those shows because they were just, to me from the beginning, it's just very off-putting. Like, the humor just didn't hit at all with me. So I'm glad you're here as, like, clearly you like that kind of humor. I know Pedro did too, at least some of it. He mentioned that he watched it. But yeah, I just thought it was kind of weird. Even at that age, not to say that it was inappropriate, it just didn't connect. And I guess looking back at hindsight, you can say a lot of stuff is inappropriate, but, you know, I don't know. I think the case for Schneider is just a case of he's a terrible boss. He was just terrible to everybody. He clearly had mood swings on set where one day he loves you, the next day you're his enemy. Couldn't take any criticism. It was his way or the highway. And a weird kind of like abusive environment, making people work crazy hours, making people give him massages on set.
That was weird.
So did you guys watch he had a sort of reaction to the documentary interview with, I don't know, some guy.
His name is Boogie with an exclamation substituting the I before the E.
Is he a child actor from that era?
No, I think he's a current actor. According to the description, his character is T-Bo, or T-Boo, T-Bo, on the current version of iCarly, which is available, which is currently streaming.
Okay. So anyway, that guy interviewed Dan Schneider, and he kind of gave him a platform to, you know, just provide some clarity or provide his point of view. The one thing the documentary does, it does give Schneider a point of view, but it does in a very small and intentional way to kind of minimize him, which is like after a segment of 20 minutes of people making very explicit accusations about Dan, they'll put like a title card with white text on black background just saying Dan denies this, right? So if you're not even looking, you don't even see that. You don't even read that. That doesn't even register. So I thought it was fair for him to sort of give his thoughts on this. Before I give my opinion, did you guys both watch it? I'm curious what your impressions were about his takes on this.
I watched part of it, and he, you know, he owned it, but like at what point? You know, like you own it after the fact, so what does it matter? To me, his only redemption was how he treated Drake after Drake came out, and he was very supportive of him when everybody else at Nickelodeon kind of shut him down a little bit, and he was there and you know, whatever he needed. So I didn't like that they made innuendos about him and Amanda Bynes, and they never like got deeper into it. They kind of like opened the window and never let anything else. But I think he was just, you know, he was a guy of that era. You know, he was just like, he was an ass to women, and he was a pain to all the people that worked under him. But I don't think he did anything like what happened to Drake. I didn't get that from, you know, from the doc.
I think the only time where he came to someone's defense, based on the story and based what he said, Dan Schneider said, he was there for support of Drake Bell. But anything else, I think the timing was, it's just a coincidence that he happened to put out a video 2 days after the first episode was on TV, and he felt like he needed to come do his own defense. Now, it's one thing if he, you know, pulled a Will Smith without his branding on his head and, you know, responded and sort of said, I'm sorry, and was just faced a camera. But instead, they had to do it as like a lightheaded, like, oh, let's do an interview. It should have, he produced shows up until like 4 years ago. So whatever he was doing, his behavior did not change. So if it took a documentary to be produced about him, and it was known that it was coming out, so he could have done something before instead of responding. It doesn't look good if he's responding to it. And there's plenty of you know, people that are responding that were actors that are doing their own YouTube videos and people doing their own little anecdotes in response to it. But I really didn't see the YouTube favorable. He even on his own website, he put that as the only, he changed his website, that's the only thing that's there, only the YouTube video. He used to have it where it had all the show he's produced, but that's now gone.
I thought, I just watched it not long ago. I didn't realize it was out. But I did think he came across pretty sincere. I understand he, you know, you mentioned, oh, is it a coincidence that he did it now? Like, no, of course not. It's a reaction. He's giving his point of view. I think, yeah, I thought he was pretty sincere in just owning everything because he was pretty explicit in the way he behaved. He didn't deny anything whatsoever. And he said, I was an asshole. I was horrible. I treated people horribly. You know, if I could go back, I wouldn't have done that. The one thing I think probably that resonated with me the most was when he was reflecting on, you know, when I came into the industry, people treated me really well. I had a really great time, and it made me love this industry. And I wish I could have gone back and gave people that same experience. You know, that to me sounded really sincere and thoughtful. I think at the end, he was kind of like, at the very, very end, he started searching for words, and some PR words came out, which just sounded like, okay, you don't need to say anymore. I think obviously he was under pressure to speak something, speak to it, whether from his representatives, and I'm sure he wanted to also clear the air. He has a career still. He's a young guy, so I'm sure he still wants to work. So all of that taken into consideration. I just think when this many people come at you, you know, you kind of realize that you messed up. And maybe some people don't get me wrong. Some people don't realize, but I feel like he kind of did. He even talked about, I think, seeing the hurt in someone's eyes and that it made him like break down or something. I don't know. I'm okay. I think he should. If he doesn't say anything, then he looks like a real jerk, like he's above it or he got away with it or whatever. So I think him saying something, kind of humbling himself a little bit, you know, I think is good. And he even, about the sketches, he's like, yeah, you can look at stuff that you think is weird now, but you're looking at it with a different point of view. Like, that was just silly humor, you know? So I thought he came across really well. And I hope, and this is just me hoping, but to me, I just hope that him and all these people that I heard just sort of come to terms with it and make some peace with it. You know, maybe they work on, you know, maybe he does a show for them or whatever, you know, because they did work together for many years.
Well, I think many of the actors, like in particular Jeanette McCurdy, which they mentioned, she put out a book, which was a very big top seller, and I think it still is. And she talks about her mother, who was, you know, I think it's something to point that she wrote about, that she was happy her mother was dead or something, and that's the name of the book, which is, you know, and she was, you know, on iCarly, and she talked about how being on the show was miserable, and she even mentioned that I think there was mistreatment on the set, and that was even before the documentary was even, I think, known at the time.
Yeah, I mean, 20 years, this guy was being a horrible boss.
I like your point, though, Bruno, what you said before, his sincerity, when he brought up that moment about, I mean, you can't fake that, about him coming into the industry, and he enjoyed it so much, and now he feels a regret that he couldn't do the same for other people, and he did the exact opposite. But I also think he was a little bit of a scapegoat for Nickelodeon as well, when this Me Too movement came through. And, like, you know, I don't think he was the only one there that was misbehaving like that. And I think they kind of, like, threw him under the bus a little bit. Not that he didn't deserve it, because the way he treated the female staff and the writers there was horrible. And, like, what he made them do and, like, just put them in awkward positions, like, you know, to fend for their jobs. But like I also think he was somewhat of a scapegoat.
Like the massaging on set, which I'm sure someone said something, but, you know, it had no power.
Yeah, or when he made that woman, one of the writers, pitch to him, and then he cut her off, and he was like, didn't you used to do phone sex? Like, completely degrading. And then she quit. Like, I think she said she went home and quit. So stuff like that is pretty horrible.
And just peer pressuring them to scream out things that he typed to them in Messenger at work. And, like, you know, just berating them until they did it. Or had that other woman do the pitch, and she had to pretend like she was being sodomized while she was making the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's just disgusting behavior. Horrible, like, dude. That's horrible.
There was plenty of opportunities for him to change, you know, to read the room and to change his behavior. But, of course, this is, of course, not to, you know, dismay what these are only, we're getting stories from person and not necessarily from him, because even he didn't necessarily give a defense to all these examples, because there were too many. It was a 12 to 13 minute interview, and I don't think if he gave a defense, if it would be justified. But there were other, you know, skits that were on, you know, all that they didn't feature were, I would say, still considered appropriate. So they only focused on a select few. And they did focus more on the new version of all that, less on the original, which is when Keenan Thompson and Kel Mitchell were on, Lori Beth Dimberg, you know, all these people. Like Keenan is, of course, on Saturday Night Live, which is like the adult version of Saturday Night Live, because when I was seeing all that, I'm like, boy, I wish he was on all that. And eventually, he made it to Saturday Night Live, which is what I was hoping for. And he's been on the show for, what, 15, 16 years now.
And Scott, to your point, that girl who wrote the book about her mother, and she came out with this way before this doc. She, like everyone else who had these accusations, they were still up on stage with him accepting awards. They were still out there in the press and smiling and taking credit with him. You know who wasn't? She wasn't. So she felt this way for a long time, and she wasn't standing up there supporting this. So that shows a lot. And now these people could all come out after the fact and be like, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I saw it. It happened to me too. But she was from the beginning. So like that shows you something.
I think you're referring to that clip when they showed him getting I don't know if it was considered a Lifetime Achievement Award, but he was getting an Accolades Award at the Kids' Choice Awards. And they were, it was knowingly, you could see who was on the stage to give him the award.
But the point is, she
and she wasn't on the
she
stage.
She wasn't there.
She wasn't. Yeah. No. That was a big. That was a big statement.
She was a co-star of one of his shows. So
mostly the people who were on stage were in the newer shows, which I think maybe he was treating. The sets were probably different by at that point, but it was mostly the newer actors in the recent shows that were on stage. And Drake Bell, I think, was on the stage too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that kind of sums it up. I don't know how deep into the Drake Bell thing you want to get. I thought that was just pretty self-explanatory, just horrible behavior and putting kids in a situation where this kind of abuse can happen. And then when someone raises a flag, they kind of get shut out. And the kid ultimately has no protection. I thought that was scary. If you're a parent, just scary if you're a parent who's thinking about putting their kid in the entertainment industry. This thing is hopefully...
His poor father who was like, no, man, this guy ain't good. And then, like, he convinced him to, like, basically get separated from his father, and then his mom took over, and then the father couldn't do anything. He saw, you know, he saw the writing on the wall, and he had his hands tied behind his back. That's horrible. And Drake, like, you know, Drake and Josh or whatever that show was, like, I never thought 2 seconds about it. But I have a newfound respect for this kid, Drake, man, for coming out and doing this. And him going to the courtroom, and when they had all the supporters for this guy,
Brian Peck.
Brian Peck, yeah. And all the support, James Marsau, who was like,
what is he doing?
Sonic. And
all the letters that they were listing, all these people that had letters about that were defending him. You go,
so but when Drake, when he said that moment when he was in court and he had like him and his family supporting him, and on the other side of the courtroom supporting this guy, it was all full. Like, how horrible must he have felt? The courage this kid had to stand up and, you know, do this.
Well, it definitely affected him in adult life, because he had a lot of, a lot of bumping into the law, as far as I think he had a DUI or, you know, things that are just him relapsing as far as what happened in his past and having to live through it in present day. What happened. It also shows, you know, how Amanda Bynes is the way she is now, where she's going in and out of rehab. And she did, you know, growing up, she did other movies, but then it just like stopped.
So is she no longer in the business?
No, she's not. But she's constantly in the tabloids of her, like, you can see her walking around just, you know, trying to...
Not doing well, yeah.
Not trying to, you know, be part of a day-to-day, you know, life. And it seems like it's a struggle. But what was interesting about watching this is seeing the backstory of what went on, particularly if you watched all these shows. I think it was a sequel to another documentary, which is on Hulu, called The Orange Years, The Nickelodeon Story.
Huh. And that's what I asked Bruno if that was the one we were covering.
Right.
What
so
is that,
that? That was
is that
the,
similar?
That's the well, that's based on before Dan Schneider joined Nickelodeon. That was the rise of the network, and they interviewed executives and all of the, and they were saying that it was just like a free for all of that they were just trying things.
But that they just didn't. Focuses on the growing of the network and
what they had an idea to make a kids network, and they called it Nickelodeon, and this how they came up with all these game shows and, you know,
okay.
Hey Dude, all Wild Crazy, that pre-time that you watched Nickelodeon, not this sitcom generation time.
Super, super positive, view of it. You know, this was on the sunny side of the tracks, whereas this doc that we just watched was, you know, not so much.
I wouldn't say sunny. I would say the orange side of the tracks.
Yeah. Well said.
It was more orange, but no, I would definitely watch it, Bruno.
Okay, yeah, I'll check it out. Okay, we're out of time, guys. We'll leave it there. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you come back soon.
Thank you guys for having me, man. It was a lot of fun. It was a dark topic, but it ended up being fun, you know, more fun than I would have thought.
Pedro, we miss you. Come back soon, buddy. All right, peace.
I think I may come back as well. I think I may join the next episode.